And good afternoon to you. It's Wendy Snyder sitting in for John Williams today. And thankfully, Elise Glink is with us to get the Wintrust Business Lunch started today. She has the best website ever, thinkglink.com. She's the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Hello again, Elise.
Hi, it's nice to talk to you.
Absolutely. All right. I was looking over some of your notes here, and is there the wealthiest generation that we're unaware of?
Right. Where's the money is, I think, what everybody's asking. Well, let's back up a bit. So the Federal Reserve Bank, every 3 years, they do a wealth survey. And on Friday afternoon, they released their latest survey. And what was interesting about this survey, they're all pretty interesting, actually. They're called the Survey of Consumer Finance. This one is the first one that included information about COVID and how people actually got through COVID, which, I thought was sort of interesting. But what came out of this is that out of the blue, millennials, which have always been referred to as the unfortunate generation,
yeah,
or the sad generation, or the we wish things were better for you generation, suddenly they are wealthier than any other generation at the same age. And it's all because of what's going on with the real estate market.
Why? All right. This is going to sound mean, and I don't mean it to, but I thought millennials are having difficulty purchasing homes and might be still living at home and stuff. Is that why they're the wealthiest?
Well, no.
Okay.
So it's actually, it's funny how years are suddenly passing, right? So we now have a new generation, not just millennials. We have Gen X and Gen Z. So Gen Z are the newest, youngest ones. They're like our kids, right? That I think the oldest of them are now around 26 or 27. Millennials, the youngest part of them, they're like 28 or 29, and they go all the way up into their early 40s.
Now. Oh, okay. So I messed them up.
They're aging, right? But for millennials, you're absolutely right. They were having trouble finding houses early on. They were also deeply affected by what happened with the Great Recession, which, hold on to your seat, that was 15 plus years ago. And so they had trouble. I know. You can take a moment to get off the floor.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm still 23 years old, so I don't understand all this.
Yeah, right. So it's funny, millennials really have had a tough time these last 15 years, but suddenly they got traction, and they got traction because they were actually buying houses or starting to buy houses in the wake of the recession. And when the interest rates fell to 2.5%, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were buying houses, and the prices of houses hadn't dramatically increased yet. And so they're the beneficiaries of that dramatic increase in a way that baby boomers aren't, and Gen Zs are just a little too young to take advantage of.
All right. Well, that makes sense. And I was wrong. You're right. Gen Z, 12 to 27. I think I was confusing them with millennials, 28 to 43. And Gen X are aged about 44 to 59. And boomers, 1955 to 1964.
Yes. And so, when you look at how it's the age is adjusted, what they give you, and I'll put it in my newsletter today, this little chart that kind of, it looks funny because it's all the spaghetti lines and each generation is a different color. But what you realize is that millennials, when you look at where they are at, say, age 38 or in the 35 to 39 area, which is kind of that, right in the middle of the millennial sort of area, you kind of see where they are lifting off above where boomers are. The problem, though, and the reason they don't feel good about it, because, if you just could look at your home equity in Zillow all day long, you'd feel great. But then you try to go to the grocery store and you can't leverage any of that.
Right.
That's why millennials are feeling so much angst about where we are in the world right now.
It's Wendy in for John. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we continue chatting with Elise Glink today. And so, Elise, you told us the Federal Reserve Bank's wealth survey came out, I believe you said, on Friday. Did we cover all that we need to on the wealth survey, or is there more?
There's so much more,
yeah.
But a couple of things to just sort of throw out there. There's a lot of focus in this country right now, especially leading up to the election, on people who are unable to buy houses. And as John and I have talked about for a long time, and I think you and I have covered this as well, you know, there are about 5 to 7 million homes that we're missing right now for the, all the number of people who want to buy it. We're just like 5 to 7 million homes short, and that's why home equity is growing and why the price of homes is so much. But for people who are renting, I just want to, the Fed found that the net worth of a renter of any age is about $10,400, while the net worth of a homeowner is almost $400,000. Just let that sink in. The value of that home equity is, you know, almost a $400,000 difference. And when I talk to people about buying homes and, you know, the stuff that I've done on the radio and what have you, you know, I always say to people, the younger you are when you buy your first home, whatever that looks like, the wealthier you're going to be later in life. And that's really proving out.
And I mean, that makes sense, though, doesn't it?
It does, but it's gotten even more extreme, I think, because of what's been going on the last, you know, since 2015 with the housing market. Because if you remember, before then, we had way too many houses. 10 million people went into foreclosure, plus, you know, we had all these homes that were for sale. People in Detroit were, you know, homes that were in foreclosure were selling in Detroit for literally $600 a house.
That's
I can't
terrible.
Tell you how many stories I wrote about that. Detroit has had a rebound in those houses, the ones that weren't torn down by the city of Detroit. They leveled blocks of these homes that were failed neighborhoods, and they turned some of them into parks, and some of them they resold to developers or what have you. But the way that home equity has grown, how quickly it's grown, is really what's behind this, you know, amazing amount of wealth and wealth creation that's come about. The problem, again, is just that if you sell it and you think, oh, I'm going to have all this cash for free, great. And now where do you live?
Well, see, that's the conundrum. You know what I mean? It really is. You know, oh, we can sell our house and make a lot of money, but then you're going to spend a lot of money for another house.
You are. And that's why more young people, and by that I mean younger, the younger end of millennials and the Gen Zs, why they're living at home and fewer are moving out to become homeowners, because they're on the wrong side of that surge of home prices. And so in 1989, when the Fed data begins, when they started doing this kind of survey, 11.5% of young adults between 25 and 34 lived with their parents. In 2022, it was 17%. So that's a big difference. So people are living at home, they're saving money, and they're trying to get to a place where they can move out and rent, which is typically the first step when you leave home. Some people, though, are leaving home and they're moving right into buying a house simply because they've saved enough money and they can, or maybe they've got some family support, or they find somebody and they buy a house together with them, or they partner up and then they and their partner go and they buy houses. So it's just kind of interesting to look at how society is changing a bit.
And I was listening to Home Sweet Home Chicago with David Hochberg, and I was listening to him say that so many people have high balances on their credit cards because they've been making ends meet by charging groceries and other things. So now a lot of people are using that equity in their home to pay off their credit card debt.
Yes, they are. And that's a concern, of course, because a couple of years ago, you could have gotten a home equity loan or refinanced and done a cash out refinance and gotten a really low interest rate. And today, those interest rates are a lot higher. So there's some concern when people are borrowing against their equity for day-to-day expenses. And I would certainly rather that, you know, people not do that. I thought it might be interesting also to compare how Americans own homes, or the number of Americans that own homes, with other countries. Because I think that people don't understand how we fit into the large grand scheme of things, right? So about two-thirds of Americans, about 64%, own their own home. And under 50% in Germany and Colombia own their own homes, which is kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. Huh.
Poland, 71% of people own their own homes. And Ireland, 41% do. In Great Britain, 39% own their home outright, 28% have mortgages on top of that. So it's just kind of interesting to see where everybody shakes out.
So what are you saying? Americans spend too much money and get in debt more?
Well, I don't know, but I don't know about more or how much debt. I mean, I do think David Hochberg is exactly right. You know, yeah. When you're carrying credit card debt, and we're at the highest number of people in this country who have ever carried credit card debt or carrying it now, and I think it's nearly or at the largest amount. And the difference is that now you're paying 19 to 29% on that debt, yeah. typically, versus what you were paying before, which might have been 8 or 9%. That's a big difference, and it's going to eat up a lot of your free cash.
I don't know how our parents and grandparents did it, because you think, oh, yeah, they bought this house for like $13,000, but they made no money then, you know? It just mm-hmm. amazes me, and they paid off their mortgage, and they lived there forever. That's how it used to be.
Yeah, it did. And I guess I would say to that, we have a very different lifestyle today. I mean, think about how many subscriptions you have to different streaming services.
Oh, I can't. It irritates me.
Okay.
At least I use them all, Elise.
You do. And you use the internet. Yeah. And, you know, but things are just, you know, the way that we live our lives today, almost without thinking it, signing up for all of these different streaming services, takeout, delivery, yeah. Of food, going to the latest restaurants. I mean, 30 years ago, going out, we had, you know, our kids weren't even born yet, but going out was still like a special thing.
Exactly. A big
and
deal.
Now you just, it's like, oh, yeah, let's just go out. And you might spend $150 on just an average Wednesday dinner for a family of four or even 100 or even 75. But that money really adds up. And I just think we have a different lifestyle creep today. And that's yeah. expensive.
All right. And, you know, I'm not knocking Taco Bell because I love it. One of my favorite fast food places. But it's over $50 for us for four people. When right. did that happen?
Right. And interestingly, it's, you know, you look on the other side and you've got all these chain restaurants that are going out of business simply because people aren't coming in as often. When they come in, they're not buying as much. They're not drinking as much, which is really where the profits are for restaurants. And it's kind of interesting. It's unclear how it's all going to end up.
Well, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to talk to you. You can go to thinkglink.com to check out Elise Glink. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Always a great time, Wendy. Thanks.
Thank you so much. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. And let's say hello to Jim Dahlke, Director of Communications, Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative. How's it going? Nice to meet you, Jim.
Hi, Wendy. Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Let's start with, everybody's calling marijuana cannabis. I feel funny saying marijuana, but cannabis is legal in Illinois, and one of the state's fastest growing craft cannabis companies is doing very well. First and foremost, what is a craft cannabis company?
Yeah, you know, I think what is craft and what is kind of larger scale is a little bit maybe in the eye of the marketing beholder. But really what we're talking here is kind of, you know, a smaller scale independent firm kind of competing with the larger kind of incumbents in the cannabis industry. So this is a grower here in the state of Illinois called Connect Wellness. They were founded just last year, actually, and began 2024 actually with no products in stores. They have grown really quickly, and now that their cannabis products can be found really in the majority of dispensaries throughout our state, around 130 stores.
Wow.
Their products are in now. Yeah, and so this comes on the heels of a $7 million fundraise that they just raised the other week to continue to grow their business.
And speaking of growing, are they growing their own stuff in Illinois?
That's right. And so, that's the big thing is that it's all about kind of like around the licensing structures and kind of going state by state. And so, yes, they're growing here in Illinois and selling here in Illinois. And, what's sort of fascinating about the cannabis industry right now is that the sector overall is kind of experiencing some ups and downs, especially in California. Out in California, we've actually seen sales of legal cannabis fall pretty sharply over the last 3 years. And actually, one of the large startups in the space, San Francisco-based company called Ease, which is over a decade old, and it was really launched as the Uber for weed, sort of a marijuana delivery firm. They actually shut down their operations recently. So the sector overall is definitely kind of going through some ups and downs, but Illinois really kind of thinks that it can still remain a very active and very promising and even growing player. The cannabis industry in Illinois reached $1 billion in 2024 cannabis sales. That was back in July. That exceeded the $2 billion in total cannabis sales for the fiscal year 2024. So the state continues to grow and really believes it can kind of be a leader in this space, especially in the Midwest.
All right. And it says in this article, Connect sells three current products, flower, live resin, and its secret sauce. Interesting. Is this mainly like, I guess, flower, vape, edibles? How do these different things come into play?
That's exactly right. So you're talking about the cannabis flower itself, vape products, and then edibles. And so if you look at the landscape in Illinois, the value of product in Illinois so far, about 49% is the cannabis flower. So that's, you know, about half, 32% for vape and another 22% for edibles. That's according to state officials here.
And what's next for Connect Wellness?
Yeah, so this company currently working out of a 22,000 square foot space in Franklin Park, and they are moving into a new facility about 62,000 square feet if they look to grow, and actually are planning to double their headcount as well. So this is a company now that's raised about $14.5 million since it first launched and looking to continue to grow.
So Illinois, a bunch of potheads. That's what I'm understanding right now. All right. I'm a suburbanite, so I don't really know much about Foxtrot. Why don't you school me and the listeners on that a little bit, Jim?
Yeah, you know, Foxtrot, it's funny. You know, startups really since the COVID pandemic through now have really, you know, seen ups and downs, a real roller coaster ride, and really no startup has kind of had a roller coaster ride quite like Foxtrot. This was a company back in 2022 that raised $100 million in venture funding. Really what they set out to do is kind of create the what they call the corner store of the future. They're really sort of reinventing what a corner store could be. They were a delivery app that delivered food and beverages to your house, really using these corner stores as a mechanism for kind of warehousing their product, and then built these corner stores really as kind of community gathering places, so places to get a coffee, to get a glass of wine, to pick up some food to go. They had grown into over, you know, 33 locations throughout Chicago, Texas, Washington, D.C. Back in April, abruptly shut down their operations just months after merging with Dom's Kitchen and Market. But, you know, the roller coaster has ticked back up for Foxtrot, as they've now kind of reinvented themselves and have opened up three locations now here in Chicago after shuttering so many just earlier this year. Their latest opening just here in Wicker Park the other week. That follows reopened stores in Old Town and the Gold Coast. So more Foxtrot locations coming back online. Certainly good news for folks in Chicago who were frequenters of their locations before they abruptly shut down earlier this year.
Absolutely. And all right, so a lot of Chicago's tech startups that are doing well are in the healthcare space. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, so PitchBook, a group that tracks venture capital funding for startups, recently released its latest quarterly report to kind of give a look at the funding environment, both in Chicago and really across the country. And locally, startup deals, you know, have continued to lag. So Chicago startups closed about 50% fewer deals last quarter than in the quarter before, and total capital in the third quarter as well dropped about 30% from the quarter before. But, you know, a bright spot does appear to be these life science and healthcare startups. So some of the top companies to raise funding in Chicago last quarter include Zing Health. This is an insurance health tech company. They raised about $140 million last quarter, and Vanqua Bio, a biopharmaceutical company that works on discovering and developing new drugs for neurodegenerative diseases. They raised about $45 million. And then Synapture, which is a virtual care platform for people suffering from things like ALS and dementia, raised $40 million. So those are three pretty significant fundraisers for Chicago's emerging health tech scene.
That's pretty incredible. And, you know, it's like a lot of the jobs, too, in healthcare are going to be something that kids should think about instead of always going to college, because there's always going to be jobs in healthcare, in taking care of people. I don't know if that's so popular because we're all getting older or we want to be healthier. I don't know which way to look at it.
Yeah, and it's really this fusion of healthcare and technology, right? We're starting to really see that. You can especially even within artificial intelligence, we're seeing lots of companies, you know, in Chicago that are in the health tech sector incorporate artificial intelligence into their business as well. So it's certainly going to be a growing sector and one that, you know, the Chicago folks here in Chicago really hope continues to grow.
Excellent. Well, so nice to meet you, Jim Dahlke, Director of Communications at Tech Nexus Venture Collaborative, technexus.com. Thank you so much. We appreciate it, Jim.
Thanks, Wendy.
And now on to Steve Grzanich with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A benefits startup from London has announced plans to locate its U.S. headquarters here in Chicago. Perks specializes in providing well-being benefits to employees. It'll launch its Chicago operation in the first quarter of next year. The local office will have just a handful of employees initially, but the office is expected to grow to 50 people. Perks is evaluating several office locations in Chicago. The company's target customers work in the gig economy, are self-employed, or are contractors who don't have access to physical, mental, and financial well-being benefits. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And now on to Steve Alexander and the business of food.
Mm-hmm, thank you. And let's begin with nature's most perfect food.
Breast milk is the gold standard. It is beautiful and magical and dynamic to every woman and baby.
But not every woman can or wants to breastfeed.
And when that mother or that parent, for whatever reason, they're all valid, has to turn to formula, they should never feel an ounce of guilt or shame.
Kim Chappell is the chief brand officer at Bobby.
Bobby is an organic infant formula and pediatric nutrition company, the only one in America founded and led by moms.
More about Bobby and a billboard kerfuffle that has the company in the news after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, in New York's Times Square, a huge billboard showing a very pregnant woman's bare belly was taken down because it violated acceptable content. Really?
When you look around Times Square, what do we see? Sexualized women's bodies left, right, and center. So why is it that we can see that, but we can't look at a pregnant woman's body and see it for what it is, which is a beautiful thing?
That pregnant model on the billboard was Molly Baz. She's a chef and author, has a huge following on social media, and now she's back on a billboard in Times Square, this time sponsored by Bobby.
Part of the story with Molly Baz is really around the beauty of combo feeding and the ability that it doesn't have to be breast milk or formula. 70% of American parents are doing both.
And on that huge billboard is Molly nursing her baby.
Yes.
So the ad people at Times Square are not okay with a big pregnant belly, but they are okay with a baby latched onto a bare breast?
The only thing that we were told was no nipple. We said, okay, that's fine. We can show breastfeeding without showing a nipple.
How's the response?
The response has been incredible. I mean, over 1 million views organically.
It does seem a bit odd, though, a formula company promoting breastfeeding.
We want people to feel confident in how they choose to feed their babies, however that looks for you.
Bobby has its own manufacturing plant and only sells what it can make, setting aside X amount for each customer who subscribes. And remember the formula shortage in 2022?
We were the only formula company in the U.S. whose customers did not face an infant formula shortage.
Much more about Bobby and Ms. Baz and the billboard at HiBobby.com. And Bobby is spelled B-O-B-B-I-E. On the food calendar, another of nature's perfect foods. It's National Apple Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Hello again. It's Wendy in for John. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, and I am going to enjoy talking to Stephen Schwartz right now. Stephen, I was just reading an article in Fortune.com about you, and talk about figuring things out. First of all, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch, Stephen.
So much for having me.
Absolutely. All right. I need a side hustle. We all want side hustles. I'm not going to make money playing bingo. I content create on the radio, but not very good at doing it elsewhere. You have figured this out. I am just intrigued with this. You have your company WHOP, W-H-O-P. Please tell us all about this because you're an amazing story here.
Yeah, thank you so much for the introduction, and I'm very excited to speak with you as well.
I started programming when I was really young, 11 or 12 years old, and I met this person named Cameron on Facebook when we were both 13 years old. And we basically started to build all these different internet projects together. We built games, we built marketplaces, we built chatting apps, we built SaaS tools, all these different software projects that we sold on the internet our whole life. Cameron dropped out of high school. I had to keep going to college. My parents made me do that. But long story short, we figured out so many different ways to make money on the internet. And when COVID happened, everybody was so chronically online all day and nobody really liked their job. Everybody was getting laid off. You kind of name it. People started to come around to what we had done our whole life. And we started to build a platform called WAP that let people go on, open a store, and start making money and finding customers from other parts of the world that the internet makes possible. So, yeah, I think that I guess our whole life we've kind of been building random businesses online, and then now we have a platform that helps other people do the same thing using all the secrets that I think we have uncovered so far throughout our journey together.
Okay, so what kind, like, it's mentioned in this article that it's kind of like Etsy because, you know, if I make jewelry or something and want to sell it, people look at it and buy it through Etsy. What is being sold on WAP?
Yeah, so in the age of the internet, it's a lot easier to make something that is digital than physical. You don't have to ship it to anybody. You don't have to worry about physical production and so on. So in WAPland, all the products that are sold are delivered via the internet. So people sell access to information. They sell educational classes. They sell access to private group chats. So for example, if you wanted to, let's say you wanted to get everybody learning about how to be a radio host because you're so talented at it, you could maybe start a WAP and have some videos in there about how to do it, have a big group chat of all the people that are also trying to learn together so that they can maybe speak to each other, collaborate with each other, give feedback to each other. So all the different products on WAP are a bundle of all these different experiences that you can build. So it's very digital and it's all information, all content, with some maybe special things like chat and forums that you might be used to using on Facebook, let's say.
So it's like a community you're creating. I mean, it sounds, now this is just coming from someone who's not a big techie. It sounds kind of like, you know, a YouTube channel, but different.
Yes.
And more connected. Is that true?
Yes. Exactly. Imagine you could start a YouTube channel, but instead of just having videos statically hosted, you could charge people for watching them. You could let all of your viewers chat with each other. You could send a push notification to all of your subscribers, telling them when your video is coming up next. You can solicit feedback from your viewers and let them tell you what they want to hear you talk about, and so on. So it's a lot more connected. That's a great way to put it.
Okay, and are there some Chicago-based creators that are making some coin on this?
There's so many Chicago-based creators, and I'm also a Chicago-based creator myself. I went to high school in Chicago, so I lived there when I was younger. But yeah, there are thousands of people that use WAP from Chicago.
Probably
tens of thousands.
All right, you have blown me away, and you didn't like play outside on the playground or anything, were you? Were you just inside working on code and playing video games?
Yeah, I was coding a lot, but I also got outside when I was going to Nike Town Chicago, waiting in line with everybody every single Saturday morning. And that was my outside time.
Okay, so this is kind of how it started. You wanted a cool pair of Nike shoes, and did that like...
I was tired of waiting in line.
So you figured out like bots to buy it online when they went on sale?
Yeah, because you could either go and wait in line all night and spend the night outside, or you could build these little tools that could get the shoes from Nike's website. And it was really hard, obviously, because they always sold out. So my friend and I built all these automation softwares that helped people get the shoes before they sold out. And then after those started to work out, we didn't need to go wait in line anymore. Although we still did. It was quite fun.
But, yeah.
You're right.
Well, you are an amazing story. His name is Stephen Schwartz, and you can go to WHOP.com, WHOP.com. And yeah, you may be seeing me in the future. I may have to start my little community.
I love it. Well, best of luck, and I hope that you do that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry. I'm a little bit of a nerd and a tech girl, and, you know, I'm sorry. Nerds are cool, and nerds are laughing at everybody else. So so nice to meet you. I appreciate it, Stephen.
Goodbye.
Have a great day. I can't believe that. Stephen Schwartz. What a young, successful businessman.